Bet365 sponsors our podcast and features over 300,000 sporting events on their betting app. It's got everything you'll ever need to bet on sport. The app lets you access pre-match and in-play markets and provides instant match updates. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sport betting company. The app can be downloaded from Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
And welcome to episode 3 of the Molyneux View. I'm Jackie Oatley and your Wolverhampton Wanderers correspondent for The Athletic. Tim Spears is here. Hi, Tim.
Hey.
Now, coming up on this pod, we are going to reflect on the latest draw with Manchester United. We're going to talk about the new boy, Daniel Pedence, as I'm told he is called. It doesn't quite feel right, does it? It feels it should be more exotic than that. We'll talk about the deadline day fun and games that Tim was heavily involved in. We'll talk about Wolves' much-needed winter break and what the players are up to. And our theme and focus for this week is on Wolves' social media, how the club interact with the supporters, and how that's changed during their rapid rise up the football pyramid. We'll have David Wilding with us. Now, David is a huge Wolves fan. He has a senior role at Twitter UK, and he has some very interesting insight into at Wolves Twitter and their analytics, which you might not particularly have considered before, but it does demonstrate just how quickly Wolves are growing as a club, both on and off the pitch. Now, Tim, you've been rather busy as well, doing a couple of interviews for us. Who have you spoken to from Molyneux View?
The legendary Richard Stearman, ex-Wolves player, now at Huddersfield, of course, back playing football again after sort of being frozen out of Sheffield United in the past few months. So yeah, he's a really prolific Twitter user, so I thought it'd be good to get his thoughts on it. And also Josh Power, who some people may know, he's worked at Wolves for many years, about 5 years, I think, and he's heavily involved in their Twitter account and has been for many years, so kind of got a really good perspective on how it's evolved over the past half a decade.
Fabulous. And we'll be getting David Wilding on the line very shortly to listen to those interviews, to give us his reaction as well, and to explain what the stats tell us about Wolves' growth as a global club. We're not going to use the word brand. We don't like that, do we? We can't talk about football clubs as brands. I mean, we'll leave that to the marketing people. At first, Tim, your winter break. Are you allowed one? Do you get one? Are you going on holiday? Are you crying out for this to put your feet up?
The fun never stops, really. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have a couple of weeks with no matches. And in fact, they've only had one match in the last kind of 10 days as well. So yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks, obviously, with the deadline last Friday. Things got very busy towards the end. An unexpectedly busy deadline day, actually. When I first kind of checked in with a few people in the morning, it seemed that there'd be no first team additions at all, which there weren't, really. It was set for a quiet day, and then the Ryan Bennett news broke.
Yeah, that was out of the blue, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then Luke Matheson after that, and then a lot of outgoings, you know, it's, towards the last few hours of the window, some of the youngsters going out on loan, etc. A couple of surprises as well, Ryan Giles going out, Brighton Abakari not going out, Dadashoff not going anywhere, and Blues calling Wolves' under-23 manager and asking who they've got up front that they can
really
lend them. Well, it certainly seemed that way. I mean, they were trying to get Bright all day, and then he turned them down last minute, so they went for Dadashoff instead, and he turned them down as well. So peculiar, really.
Do you know why they turned them down?
Bright was very much going to be a permanent deal, and I gather they just couldn't come to a financial agreement, which is a real shame because Bright's now in limbo for 6 months and his career's going nowhere fast, I'm afraid, for such a talented young lad. And Dadashoff, happy to be in the under-23s, I think, for now, and getting regular football, and perhaps there was a risk that they wouldn't be playing that much at Blues, but I thought, you know, the opportunity to maybe play for a championship team for the second half of the season would be too good to turn down, but obviously not. So yeah, it was a busy day in the end. The Ryan Bennett one really took people by surprise. The last I'd spoke to Wolves about it was on the Wednesday, and they were quite adamant that he very, very unlikely that he'd be going anywhere. But the offer of a potential $5 million in the summer for someone who's not even in their squad at the moment was too good to turn down.
And his age as well, yeah.
Yeah, from the player's point of view, very much an upward move up the table. Potentially could be playing for a Champions League team next season. And also up the pecking order because he just wasn't on the bench for Wolves. And now, from what I gather, he will be on the bench for Leicester and be kind of next choice behind Siunku and Johnny Evans. I mean, he's not going to force his way into the team there without an injury, but he's certainly next in line. And from what I gather, if Brendan Rodgers is keen to maybe try three at the back, then he'd be ready-made to slot in. So, yeah, a good move for him, but a shame to see him move on.
And he was the only Englishman to score a league goal for Wolves since April 2018 at Sheffield Wednesday when Afobe scored, and then Cody also that penalty. Probably Wolves fans don't really think about these things, but I have to admit that I do find it a little bit of a shame that there isn't more of an English contingent, and it is extraordinary to think that no English player has scored apart from that goal he scored against Leicester in that crazy 4-3 game last season. Do you think it bothers you? Does it matter, or is it completely irrelevant these days?
I don't think it matters when you look at where they are on the table. I think that's what most fans would say, but you've got to have an English core to your club. You've got to have players who understand what it means to play for Wolverhampton Wanderers and in English football in the Premier League. I'm not saying that people can't do that coming over from Portugal, but I think when you've got someone like Connor Cody can impress on everyone just exactly what it means, what it takes, what the competitions mean, what it means to beat certain opposition, what it means to play at certain grounds, and also for the English and British lads that are currently there. I mean, it's kind of a dwindling group, and you know, any workplace that you work at, you know, you want a few mates there, and I know him and John Ruddy are very close. I'm sure John will have been sad to see him go. So yeah, there's all sorts of intricacies and dynamics in the dressing room that may not be apparent at first, but the bottom line is results on the pitch. Seen a bit of frustration about Wolves' transfer window as a whole from fans. I spoke to quite a few at Old Trafford before and after the game, and I think there was definitely an expectation that they'd bring another striker in. Didn't quite happen, but it was a busy window considering they've only brought in one first team player. It was a very busy window. They've let a few go, Vallejo, Catrone, and Bennett, and then some really interesting under 23 additions. You know, Luke Matheson. They were delighted to get him in the building and get him over the line.
Really?
Fantastic young talent.
Was there a lot of competition for his signature?
Certainly interest from other Premier League clubs, absolutely. I mean, he's hardly been under the radar, you know, with what he's done. Rochdale's youngest ever player, scored at Old Trafford, of course, this season, and played a lot of times for them, at least 20 games for Rochdale this season. So, yeah, I think that's a coup, really, to get him in. Like I said, it's not the big names that people wanted, but it's a really key, important part of Wolves' transfer strategy.
Also, when you think about other clubs, and there's been a lot of clubs in the Premier League, the fans up in arms with the short-term, haphazard nature of their signings and what's the plan, what's the strategy. You can't aim that at Wolves, can you? Because they are building from the bottom up in a way. Yes, they've bought some, you know, some big-name players like Raul Jimenez, who they've clearly improved before they made him permanent. But filling the under-23s with talent, and we know the way they nurture the club, the players, and do make them better. Surely Wolves fans would be heartened by that, even if it's not necessarily an immediate return.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point on the improvement of players. Even someone like Ryan Bennett, I thought he improved immeasurably as the 2 or 3 years went on, certainly on the ball. Norwich fans were blown away by the improvement that he showed. Nuno's done that with Traore, with Vinagre, with Neves, with Cody, with Doherty, with all of them. And I think what you can say about Wolves' transfer strategy, it's more organic growth, and they're buying players with room for improvement. Pedence being a perfect example, you know, didn't set the world on fire in Portugal. I don't think he really scored there. He's gone to Olympiacos, he's done very well, albeit in the Greek league. That's got to be taken into account.
Where so Marco Silva won the league by about a million points.
Yeah, so you're paying for potential, but on a smaller scale, they're trying to do what Liverpool have done, I think, where they bought in Mane and Salah and Robertson for very, very cheap fees in hindsight, and even at the time, it wasn't a huge amount of money spent, and they've improved them, and it's taken 2 or 3 years and or longer, and look where they are now. So Wolves are trying to do that on their own scale and try and become a Champions League team by identifying potential, not paying more than 20 million. And if you look at the values of the players they've got now, Traore, Neves, Bolly signed for 10 million, you know, you wouldn't sell him for that now, Jota for 13 million. So if they continue that, then they're going to have an extremely valuable squad and players who are improving.
I did enjoy the comparison of Daniel Pedence with Eden Hazard at Old Trafford at the weekend. I think it was Jamie Redknapp who said it. And actually, you know what it means in terms of physicality, small, robust, skillful. Take a bit of that, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, he looks rapid. I see exactly what they mean with the low centre of gravity and close ball control and appearance as well. He sort of looks a bit like him and runs a bit like him. So, yeah, very promising signing. Got a good glimpse of him at Old Trafford on Saturday. I thought he did well. He looks ready to me. You know, he doesn't look like he's going to take a little while to bed in. And we've spoken a lot in the about how when the Portuguese players come in, it's easier for them to hit the ground running because there's so many of them already there, and it feels like a home from home. So I know Wolves are a little bit short in a couple of areas. You know, you might say they're short of a centre half now, or you might say they're short of a striker. But what you wouldn't say is that they're short of forwards, because there's incredible competition for places there now with Jota and Traore, Pedence and Neto, who's really blossomed as the months have gone on this season. So, you know, when it comes to the crunch, February, March, April, and you need your goals and assists from these wide areas, Wolves look very well placed.
And about Luke Matheson, is it a maximum of £1 million that he signed for from Rochdale, or is it potentially a lot more lucrative for Rochdale if he goes on to do well?
From what I gather, it's a huge deal for Rochdale, and it starts at £1 million and gets bigger. And with add-ons as the years go on, they were really keen for him to go back to Rochdale as well this season on loan. And it's a bit of an unusual deal in that it's centred a lot around his education as well. They're really keen for him to continue his education. Extremely bright lad, takes it very seriously, studying his A-levels at the moment, very grounded family. So, yeah, to get him over the line, I mean, they identify him as being very well suited to the formation they play, since he's a right wing back. We haven't had an obvious backup to Doc since Nuno took charge, really. I mean, we've seen Bennett, Oscar Burr, Rasmussen and others. Johnny has switched flanks as well, and Traore, of course, this season has played there. But there hasn't been a typical right wing back to back up Doc. But now I think, with the improvement that they're expecting Matheson to make and the level he's already starting at, he could be that man in the next few years.
Yeah, and I love hearing players like him talk when they've clearly got that sort of background of being the sort of player that you want at your club. And when he burst on the scene with that famous goal and his teammates and manager and school teacher and everyone were quoted as saying what a great lad he is, the type of character he is. And him himself in that lovely BBC video, if you haven't seen it, look it up, where he talks about being this little kid in glasses. My little boy wears glasses. And I think it's an inspiration that, you know, little boys running around playing football probably think, you know, with their little glasses on, they're not going to make it. And this kid has done so, so well. And it's good to see and exciting to think he could replace Matt Doherty whenever the time comes, that you've actually got somebody you've planned for the future.
And yeah, absolutely. And he's so erudite and so confident but not arrogant, and so well spoken for a young man, a really kind of unique character in football circles, really. So they've got a lot of high hopes for him. I know it's, you know, he's one that they've kept track of for a while, so yeah, let's see what he can do, but not too much pressure.
And so what's the vibe around the club about the dealings that they've done in this window? Are they satisfied?
I think Nuno's satisfied. I mean, they're obviously, I know he's spoken a lot before the window about wanting to bring players in, but I tell you what, you know, they weren't scrambling around on deadline day. Absolutely not. You know, they'd decided that they were happy with what they've got. I think they've taken a look at Campana in training and been impressed, and decided, as they do, not to just bring players in to be backups. It's a very consistent strategy. They just do not bring players in to sit on the bench. You can't argue with their recruitment success over the years. So January is a horrible time to buy. And you know, you look at Man United being ridiculed for bringing in Ighalo, who apparently Villa were offered but turned down because they didn't want him. And then you look at the players that maybe Villa have bought in as well, the lad they bought in from Swansea, hardly prolific. So and you also look at a host of clubs who wanted a striker, like Chelsea, Newcastle, many others in the Premier League, Crystal Palace. It's a horrible time to buy. Wolves looked at Oliveira. I think they thought it wasn't good value for money, and that, again, he wouldn't be playing very much. And this isn't from inside knowledge, but certainly looking at his career history, you know, he's been a bit of a disruptive influence in the past, and I'm not sure it would be a wise move to bring him in to sit on the bench. So slight frustration that they couldn't get another deal or two done, but they'll look towards the summer. They're happy with what they've got, and they feel they've got enough. Certainly with the injured players coming back, Jackie, I think that was really key. Bolly back, Jota back, Gibbs White back, and Jordao as a backup central midfielder. They now feel they've got enough strength in depth for what's ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is good to hear you talking about the thought that goes into these things. I go back to it because obviously I host a debate show on a Sunday morning, and the number of clubs that we talk about and their awful transfer strategy, policy, knee-jerk, so-and-so offered this player on deadline day and they thought, oh, go on then. No thought really has gone into the character of these players. And often that comes back to bite them on the bum later. And you can't accuse Wolves of that. You might, from the outside, look at it and think, oh, I could do with a few more bodies in the door. But Wolves don't see it that way, do they? They think analytically about what each player could do to the squad in terms of the personality, if they're not playing. Nuno doesn't like players on the sideline, does he? And this is the result.
It's a very kind of finely tuned operation, and you're absolutely spot on about characters in the building, and you know, all footballers have got an ego, but the Wolves lot are better than most, I think, on that front. All good guys, you know, they all mix together well. So I know it's frustrating for fans, and if I was Nuno, I'd have wanted a backup to Jimenez, because you know, if he breaks his ankle tomorrow, I literally don't know what they'd do. But that's their choice, and you can't argue with it. You can't question their record. So Fosun are very methodical in what they do, very long term. They do not throw money at anything, and that's reflected in what they've done over the last few years. So, like I said, frustration from the fans, yes, but are Wolves confident with what they've done? Yes.
I did enjoy reading the subject line of the email from Wolves just before we started recording, and it said, Wolves settle for point at Old Trafford. Now, it's not very long ago that we would not really have expected to be reading an email from the club saying, Wolves settle for point at Old Trafford. But it just proves how far they've come, that they're sort of happy with the point in the end, but actually they know full well that they could have taken all three on another day.
Yeah, I think that was the theme of the day, really, in that it was, yeah, look at where Wolves are at, in that there was, again, frustration from fans, certainly on Twitter, that, you know, they didn't go for it more in the second half. And I know it's a repetitive thing to kind of look back at where Wolves were, but you've got to say that in 2013, when Man United won their last Premier League title, you know, Wolves were preparing for life in League One, which just shows you. And now, I think, certainly on the field, you look at these two clubs going in opposite directions. And I thought Old Trafford was a horrible kind of sterile place on Saturday, as it was for the cup replay, and so much negativity and so many players out of form, and the Wolves are just the exact opposite, really, just going in the other direction. And like I said, a slight frustration with supporters that Nuno didn't go for it more in the second half, but he's not that kind of manager. He's very pragmatic, very safety first, you know, get a foothold in the game, let's not lose. And Wolves have conceded the first goal for 8 league games in a row. So I think to go there against a United team that definitely improved in the second half, and I thought were inspired a little bit by Fernandes, I thought played pretty well, although he was outshone by Neves for me, who was outstanding. But all things considered, yeah, you've got to class it as a good point, definitely.
I had one eye on it while I was presenting the darts from Milton Keynes, and I had my iPad up there. But seeing Raul Jimenez very slowly trudging off in stoppage time, I saw the local, I think it was the Manchester Evening News reporter, complaining about this and saying, Wolves are better than that, why have they got a player doing this? And of course it winds up the opposition when you do it, but it's not a very Wolves thing to do. And I replied to him saying, I think it's because they'd played brilliantly against Tottenham at home, Liverpool at home, come away without a point, and they frankly just didn't want that to happen again this time at Old Trafford. Is that fair?
Absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. You know, they've learned from their mistakes on that front, and equally they could have conceded a last minute goal, couldn't they, with that Dalot header. But then I thought they looked dangerous on the break, and you know, they did that a lot that last season, and I thought the game kind of showcased perfectly, you know, the two ways that Wolves play now. Last season they were very much sit deep and counter attack against the top six, and they did that in the second half at Old Trafford. But in the first half, I thought they really took the game, and they almost took the game to them, almost playing like a home team at times. I mean, they were spraying it around in United's half. They were getting big numbers forward. They were trying to control the game, which they did to a large extent. Really impressive. Just missing that touch in the final third, which I wouldn't say is a problem, given the goals they've scored in recent weeks, although I know they've suffered against United. But sometimes you've got to give praise to the opposition as well, and United's defence is, I think, it's the third best in the league. Tough to crack. And like I said, thought they improved in the second half and sort of pinned Wolves back, really. So all things considered, it was a good point, and Wolves are in a very good position now, heading into what is a good winter break for them. And I think it'll benefit Wolves more than most clubs, to be honest, because they've got such a small squad and these players need resting, and I think they'll benefit from it. They're away in Marbella this week. Leicester game isn't until a week on Friday. And, you know, big push coming up. Leicester at home, Norwich at home. If they can get maximum points from those, you know, they're right in the hunt for fifth, maybe higher, depending on what Chelsea do. And Chelsea are very consistent. So what it's going to be about for these next few months, and I know Europe's going to take a big focus, but for now, looking at the league, extremely tight from fifth to ninth, tenth, and it's going to be about consistency. And Wolves did it last season. From this time onwards, they put together a string of performances, won half their games, won eight of their last 16. If they can do that now with a settled side and good options from the bench, then we'll see where it takes them. We'll see where it takes them, whether it's fourth, fifth, sixth. I think that's what they'll be aiming for. And we'll see if they can combine it with Europe and which kind of comes the key priority, you know, come March.
I just had a look at the table earlier. Saw they're only 2 points ahead of Everton. I thought, how on earth has that happened? We are going to get you to answer a few questions from Wolves fans. People have tweeted it, so thank you for that. But let's do that at the end of the podcast, because I really want to bring in David Wilding now, who's been very patiently waiting and listening. And hopefully, David, as a Wolves fan, you haven't minded too much listening to all this Wolves chat.
No, it's not been too awful for me listening to a conversation about Wolves and, you know, talking to you about Wolves and Twitter. You know, there's worse ways to spend my time, definitely.
So, David, you are David Wilding and you work for Twitter UK. Just tell us what your role is.
So my role is to basically help people, brands, organisations to understand Twitter and to use it in their daily life. So it's a very wide and varied role.
And first of all, your Wolverhampton Wanderers credentials, because you now sound like you come for a Bilston bab.
My dad was from Cannock, born and bred in Cannock, and basically all of my sort of dad's side of the family are from the West Midlands. He used to follow the Wolves in the 50s and 60s. We had quite a good team then. And he said to me, he said it used to be one bus to the Wolves and two buses to the Albion. So they went to the Wolves. So I'm quite pleased he did, to be honest with you.
Very relieved. We are just going to have a little listen to a couple of interviews that Tim has very kindly done this week on your travels, Tim. Tell us first of all about the Richard Stearman one and how that came about.
I thought it'd be really good to get a player's perspective. And, you know, not many of the current crop use Twitter in a very kind of engaging way. You know, there's a lot of kind of more maybe managed accounts, you might say, from some of the more prominent names at Wolves.
Hang on, seeing Adama Traore tweeting after the Man United game, stalemated Old Trafford with a picture of him running very fast. Are you suggesting he didn't write that himself?
I didn't see that, that's funny.
You cynic.
And they've got their own graphics and everything for like pre-match pictures now, you know, let's go and win tomorrow and all this stuff, which is a shame really. And likes of like Connor Cody doesn't use it and John Ruddy. And I thought Stearman is obviously such a popular figure with Wolves fans, could share a bit of his insight really into how and why he uses it, because I think he injects his personality into it and won't be shy to tweet after a defeat or whatnot. So yeah, I thought I'd kind of get his take on how he uses Twitter and maybe why some players don't.
I find it a great platform that anyone can sort of contact me, and I'm quite easygoing. If you want to come and chat to me about football, you see me about, like, I've got absolutely no problem doing this. It's what I love doing, and Twitter gives me that base and that platform to do it on a regular basis, whether that be with journalists or just fans in general. It's something that I really enjoy and that I've used quite a lot in the past, and I'll continue to do so. It can be a little bit of a minefield. You've got to be very sort of careful and wary about what you're writing or tweeting about. It's something that you can land yourself in hot water and end up getting fined or suspended for. So you have to be quite careful with what you put. A lot of pros, certainly the high profile ones, will have someone manage it themselves. I don't. I like to sort of manage that myself. So yeah, I've just got to be a little bit wary about what I'm tweeting about, which I think I have been so far. So
we can definitely tell that you run your own account, mate. You didn't have to sell us that. So do some kind of players kind of think, what's the point and what's the benefit of doing it? I mean, you see even like James Maddison getting stick, I don't know if you saw, for giving his opinion on a very kind of blatant handball decision, and he's had loads of stick on Twitter. So I guess you kind of think, it's easy to think, what's the benefit?
You're not going to please all the people all the time, are you? So there's always going to be some adverse comments to whatever you post. It helps if you're not too controversial with it, if you don't want to see too much negativity, but then it becomes a little bit boring and staged, I think, if it's too much that way. So you'd like to keep it fresh and interesting, but at the same time, you've got to be respectful about other people and their opinions, and and just try and manage that in the right way.
What about biting back? I'm sure, as every footballer, you've had your fair share of stick over the years. Have you ever kind of delved into that? Have you been tempted to do it, or is it a bit of a
no? I think it just escalates, and you're just giving people what they want, and that's some airtime. So for me, it's a one chance policy with me. You say something not great, then you get blocked, and that's it. That's not what I'm here for. It's, you know, to interact with people in a positive manner, and if you want to say something derogatory or blow the belt, then that's it with me. So you've got to be very careful with people. They're just trying to get a bite out of you. You just got to shut that down pretty quickly.
So David, it was good to hear from a player's perspective of how they use Twitter. What would you recommend that players do to make it work to their advantage, if you like?
I think ultimately what Twitter gives you is a way to connect with fans if you want to do that. So as Steer said in that interview there, you're not going to please all the people all the time. But what you can do is really delight some of the people some of the time and really build that relationship. So I think authenticity, you kind of talked about it there. It's just a really, really important thing. It's not necessarily the modern way for Premier League footballers with managed accounts to connect with their fans on Twitter. But I think people really do appreciate it when you're yourself. And you're just showing that you care is something that Twitter's really fantastic for.
Do not think you can beat this tweet from a footballer. It's the world's greatest tweet. You remember Victor Anichebe? He signed for Sunderland, I think it was. And his tweet says this: "Can you tweet something like, 'Unbelievable support yesterday. Great effort by the lads. Hard result to take, but we go again.'"
Yes, I remember that tweet very well. Bit of a copy and paste job, that, I think, from his agent. But yes, it's very, very amusing for quite a lot of people at the time. But it shows the importance, doesn't it, of being authentic and being yourself.
Oh, do you know, I was just going to say, I mean, there is a serious side there. I mean, Tom Pope, the Port Vale striker, has been banned a couple of times this season, I think, for his social media use. Mm. And there's been a couple of Wolves Twitter faux pas in the past. Do you remember Stephen Fletcher's head's gone?
Yes.
When he said he put in a transfer request. Head's gone. You had that Benicophobia rant a couple of years ago as well.
Yes.
So yeah, the war of words with Wolves at the time. But equally, he saw that as a platform to defend himself, didn't he? So very interesting how they all use it.
Exactly. I mean, do you remember Darren Bent? I had an interview with him recently, and he was explaining in the early days of Twitter, really, in terms of mainstream use. And he was just desperate to get out of Tottenham and move to Sunderland because he wasn't going to play there and he was being messed about. And he just let rip about Daniel Levy on Twitter, didn't he? And he said it was a means to an end. It actually got him the move that he wanted. It was just frustration. And as we all know, whether you've either had a couple of drinks or whether you're really angry about something, that you really just got to try and control yourself.
I think from my perspective, what it does is it gives players a direct voice to say what they want to say. And to be honest, the gaffes tend to be high profile and remembered, like the Victor Anichebe tweet and what have you. But while people don't talk about it as much, 99 times out of 100, it's players connecting with fans, building that relationship, potentially endorsing their sponsors. There's a huge amount of kind of positives of being able to connect with people every day in a direct way like that.
It is, and especially if they tweet it themselves and write it in a normal person's language. If you, I don't know, say you made a horrible error on the pitch and you feel absolutely shocking about it, instead of going to ground and switching everything off and having dinner with your family, if they do tweet, "I completely hold my hands up today, I'm devastated about the error," fans very quickly come back on side and say, "Don't worry, mate, totally understand." It really, really can be used as a positive tool to actually help you in your job, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we see that day in, day out. People using Twitter to connect with people that they just wouldn't otherwise be able to speak to. Yeah, back probably when my dad was going to the Wolves on the bus, it wouldn't be too unlikely for him to see a player, travelling to the ground with him. And that ability just to connect with people really does build that relationship. And in modern football, players are, quite well protected and kept away from fans. So what they've got through Twitter is that ability to have those conversations, and fans definitely really appreciate that.
Okay, well, let's get the perspective now on Wolves' Twitter account, @Wolves, and they also have another couple as well. And Tim's been to speak to Josh Power from the Wolves media team.
As long as I've been in football, so I've worked in football now for 7 years, and always been in the club, and not once I've ever broken a transfer, as in been the first person to,
wow,
or been the first place to announce something. So now you've got absolutely no chance in the Premier League with the amount of interest there is in the club. You know, you're talking the news about the player is probably out 2 weeks before it actually happens, and there's so many things that need to happen before that first rumour and the actual confirmation of the player arriving. And, you know, like supporters obviously get frustrated because they just want to see that confirmed. Because we're in the business now of confirming something rather than announcing it or breaking something. Yeah. So it's just, for us, it's about making sure that you do that in the right way. And, you know, it's so tricky to... It's hard because that many things have to happen between those two stages. So, you know, they have to agree terms with the club. The clubs have to agree. The player has to agree. The player then has to travel to the club. The player has to go through their medical. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're dealing with, like, the tiniest little window to do media. And you... It kind of limits you and holds you back sometimes because you might get half an hour with the player and you've got to create stuff that, you know, is going to really engage with support. So you want to try and get it right. So we made a decision at the start of last season to try and keep everything quite consistent, mm-hmm. because I think big grand announcement videos are sort of going out of fashion a little bit on accounts. You don't really see it as much anymore. I think like clubs have had a lot of fun with it over the years and they've gone really grand, but we wanted to. You know, we've got a really talented video team. Like everyone in there is great at their job, and we thought make the best use of that as possible. And have something quite formulaic and quite consistent. So we wanted to go with consistent announcement videos. But then again, you can't just keep it the same all the time. You have to evolve. You have to keep changing.
Well, like yesterday's video with Luke, which was fantastic. I mean, that just a great idea of this kind of. This kid coming in and all inspiring, look at Molyneux. I mean, that worked really well.
And that again, that comes down to now. I mean, if you look at our video team, it's gone from having just one person in it, which is maybe about two years ago, to having now four. And, you know, they've got the equipment and they're all talented guys and they can make this stuff look exceptional. And that's what's something that I think we've always really tried to do. We've always tried to pride ourselves on how things look on our channels. And so, like, the video guys are just capable of making these videos, and it's so eye-catching, and it's trying to do something in a different way. And I think if you look at, for us, it was more about what follows the announcement rather than the actual announcement, because that's what we wanted to work on, because that's what we can do. So if we're working on, like, sort of behind-the-scenes videos and interviews and everything that gives people a bit more of an insight than what they might normally have. Because I think what we used to do is go quite big on the announcement video, but then not have enough really to follow that up. So if you put all your resource into that, then the stuff that follows might not be as good. So, you know, after we announce a signing, you look at the 24 to 48 hours after that announcement, you know, we like to think that the channel is constantly populated with new and engaging and eye-catching.
I heard an interesting stat recently that Wolves' engagement rate on Twitter was better than Man City's during their treble winning season last season.
We're in a really unique position as a club because we've gone through quite a quick rise to mm-hmm. you know, the success that the club's seeing now, and because of that our following is consistent to what it was when we were in the Championship. It's growing quickly, but we still have a really small following compared to like a Man City or a Liverpool, but because it's so small and we've never sort of paid for followers or we never done anything cynical like that. We've always it's been quite organic how we've gained followers. So that because it's a small group that's growing, it's still all engaged with what we do. And I think a lot of it comes down to as well as a team behind the scenes, we've grown to a place where we can really look at the numbers behind what works. So we hired a social media manager. I think you met my Rob. We hired him a couple of years ago, and he's been a massive part of why the club's seen such success on social. Because before that time, you know, the social media accounts were down to perhaps myself and one other person, and as well as that, you know, I was working with video, I was working with editorial, I was helping arrange interviews with the media. So I'd never had the time to, or the team never had the time to really look at the numbers behind social and what works. And so having that person with that expertise come in and sit down and study your channels and say, right, well, this works here because of this, and this works here because of this, and we can target this audience at this time. It just makes a massive difference. And, you know, having that person in that role, and Rob's been great, like, really massive part of why the club's done so well on social.
Well, thank you so much to Josh Power, Senior Content Manager at Wolves, for his insight there. David, what did you make of that?
I thought it was very interesting what Josh has touched on. There was a couple of different things. So yes, when a lot of clubs were growing their social media accounts in quite a significant way, that period between 2012 and sort of 2015, when smartphones were growing, you could do more with images, you could do more with videos or whatever. Your listeners will know that wasn't necessarily a great period for the Wolves. You know, it's kind of peak Dean Saunders and post Saunders era, the club finding itself back in League One. And it's very hard to kind of, you know, break the internet, if you like, when you're signing Kasper Gorks on loan from Reading. So the role for...
Those were the days. Oh, let's go back to that. Come on.
Oh, man.
Come on,
it wasn't that long ago, was it? But the role for Twitter then for the club was really to keep that core fan base together and really sort of, you know, ensure that the sense of humour is there, they're giving information, they're giving access to what's going on behind the scenes. I remember, I think about this morning, I remember one Valentine's night replying to Wolves Twitter asking for Wolves players that you could, you know, romantic sounding Wolves players and songs and all that kind of stuff. And I think my brother came up with, I don't know much, but I know Iwelemu or something. I mean, brilliant. but it seems silly, but it was a really important incredible way of kind of keeping the fans together. But of course, with the on-field success, what we now see is a very established and modern Premier League club, which sounds brilliant to say, doesn't it? Won't ever sound, get bored saying that. And what they're doing, they're up to over 500,000 followers now. So as Josh said, it's one of the lower ones in the Premier League because of that lag. But the growth is enormous. So to give that in context, in the last month alone, in January, Wolves grew by 30,000 followers. In the week after the victory over Man City and the very narrow defeat at Liverpool, which we're calling a draw with a Neto goal, in that week they grew by 10,000 followers in that week alone. There's now a Spanish Twitter handle for the Wolves, there's a Portuguese one, there's a Wolves eSport handle. So everything points towards them using Twitter and social media to really sort of communicate with people in a way that feels modern, but also importantly feels authentic. There's a real sort of sense of humour to what Wolves do, and as Josh said there in the clip, the videography of the account has come on in leaps and bounds. I remember the end of the last season, obviously fantastic on-field success. So lots of opportunities to put those little videos out and celebrate success. But there was one video in particular where the Wolves badge, you know, the eyes and the Wolves badge sort of merged into the Europa League logo. And, you know, Wolves Twitter just sort of exploded and people loved it and really, really responded to it. So they just seem to... getting the knack of getting that right.
Do you ever look at other clubs? You don't need to name them, but do you ever see them on Twitter and think, no, 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 don't do that. You're making an absolute fool of yourself.
I think less so making a fool of yourself now. I think it's more that I think there are clubs missing opportunities to do something that's sort of quite humorous and tongue-in-cheek. There's some clubs who are kind of slightly fear, you know, that level of pushing it a little bit further. There's a lot of football clubs have a culture of control and not wanting to necessarily let go. And I completely understand that with modern clubs. But when you do that, the rewards really are massive. So, and again, another Wolves example, the Man City game, the 3-2 home victory, when Sterling took his penalty, you know, so many times, he's allowed to retake it and retake it. And then when he's finally scored it, City put out a tweet with the line, if you can keep your head while all around are losing theirs, you know, you'll be a man most for sign or something, 1-0 City. And literally on the final whistle, Wolves replied to it with a very simple, just an emoji of someone whose head's exploding. And it's like perfectly timed, perfect reaction to what was going on. So I don't think necessarily I sort of hold my head in my hand and go, oh no, this is terrible. But I do sometimes think you can do so much more. People want to engage with clubs and with all types of different accounts, but they want people to be people. They want people to make them laugh and kind of, as well as just sort of giving them the basic information.
The other thing to note with Wolves is that they've got a couple more accounts now. So they've got Wolves Academy, which hoovers up all of the, you know, the academy news and the matches, and they've got Wolves Help as well. So I was talking to Josh a lot about this on Saturday, and you know, they've got to appreciate now that they haven't just got your core Wolves followers. So say if they put out a tweet about tickets, maybe, then obviously only 30,000 of their 500,000 followers will actually be interested in that, you know. So they've got to appreciate they've got, you know, casual Wolves fans as well when it comes to what they tweet out. But it's interesting to see how it's evolved over the years. I mean, I remember Paul Berry, who people will know and has worked for The Athletic as well. You know, he used to run the Twitter account in its early days, and, you know, he'd be having a beer on a Saturday night watching Match of the Day and replying to Alan Shearer saying he was talking nonsense and stuff like that. You know, you could never do that now. It's far more kind of polished and corporate now, but as David was saying, you know, some of the video content they do is ridiculously high standard. You know, it's good enough for TV. It's like, it's unbelievable. And I think it has to be that way as the club grows, really. You know, you're opening yourself up to ridicule otherwise. You know, David's suggesting there's some of the things that other clubs do. So I think it's absolutely fascinating, and Wolves do it really well.
The only other thing that I would say is that the diversification that, Tim speaks about, is fantastic. So, there's now a Wolves women account as well. But as well as all those accounts run by the club, Wolves Twitter is bigger than just, the club accounts. So, there's a huge number of fans and fan groups on Twitter. It's a brilliant way of, following local journalists, experts, people with a, the inside view on what's going on at the club. Increasingly we're seeing the growth of Wolves Analytics, Wolves Fan Analysis, things like the Wolves Fancast, who've been doing a great job for such a long time. Whose kind of meme game is particularly strong as well. And again, personally speaking, as a Wolves fan and a Twitter fan, there's nothing that beats a kind of Tim Spears caps lock tweet, because that largely suggests that the Wolves have scored a goal, and there's not a lot better than that, is there?
Yeah. I'll let you into a secret. I actually have Tim on notifications. So if you have Twitter on your phone and you press follow, just next to the follow button is a little bell sign, and particularly on a match day, so that when I'm doing another game, before I hear in my headphones even that Wolves have scored or conceded, I've always got Tim's caps lock coming up saying goal, as well as Twitter. So I mean, that's not great for your headspace for the rest of your week, but I can
imagine.
I get told off by a lot of people, because especially if they're watching it on telly, like I think Amazon was a good minute or two behind, wasn't it, with the stream, and people were very angry that I was telling them that Wolves had scored before they'd seen it.
Just one last tip for me would be that we just launched something called Topics on Twitter, which allows you to follow a topic rather than as well as just an account, and you can follow Wolves as one of the topics. So if you go to Topics and then Football, Premier League, you click on Wolves and you'll get Wolves tweets into your Twitter feed, as well as obviously the people that you follow. So it's worth trying. It's a new feature that we just launched to try and make it easier for people to follow the great stuff on Twitter.
Thank you, David. I'll literally never get any work done ever again, but thank you for creating something. And lists as well. David's been trying to get me into lists. Tim, we were having a little chat during the week, weren't we, about our Twitter analytics. And if you Google Twitter analytics, you can see pretty much the type of people that follow you, where they live and gender breakdown and everything. And mine's 75% male. 25% female, depends how your maths is, if you work that out yourself. A little bit disappointed that only 6% of my followers are from the West Midlands.
Oh, Jackie.
Very surprised by that. 98% of my followers are sport fans. What about you?
I'm far more in touch with my roots, Jackie, so I'm 35% Midlands.
Are you?
And 83% male, actually. And there's a lot of T-Mobile users follow me as well, apparently. 37% of my followers are via a T-Mobile account.
Which maybe they've got a very strong mast in...
I find that fascinating, the analytics. I was looking at mine earlier. My tweet's got 17 million impressions over the last 28 days, which I find incredible. Impressions mean the number of times a tweet has been shown in somebody's timeline. And really interesting, I presumed that deadline day would be like the busiest day for like people following me and liking and retweeting tweets and replying, etc. But no, it's actually Southampton away, as far as the last month goes, which got 1.9 million impressions, tweets that day from the day of their Southampton game. And that is because it's an away game that wasn't on TV. So people who can't get hold of a dodgy stream and aren't watching overseas...
Which is illegal, by the way.
Which is very illegal. Don't do it, kids. So they're following me on Twitter for what's happening in that game, even more so than on deadline day, which I found very interesting. But there's so many kind of nuances, from a journalist point of view into using Twitter. We could do a whole podcast on that, to be honest. But it's such an incredible tool for information, for journalists these days. And certainly when it comes to transfers, deadline day being a case in point, links are rising all over the place and you've got to try and find out whether they're true or not, and kind of balance that desire with the insatiable lust for people wanting information first, and getting correct information out. I mean, another topical and tragic subject was Kobe Bryant's death last week, where I saw three verified accounts put out wildly different information on who had actually died, in that fatal accident. All verified accounts, all journalists in America. And obviously two of them got it, horribly, horribly wrong. And it just shows you that it's better to wait and be correct than be first and wrong. And that's certainly what I try and do, certainly when it comes to, in comparison, very mundane things like football club signing football players. So it's like I said, it's a fantastic tool, but also very dangerous as well. You've got to be very careful with what you're putting out there.
talking about Twitter, we've had quite a lot of tweets. So thank you for your immediate feedback. It's very handy for these kind of things, isn't it? We are running out of time, so we'll whiz through a few of them. Molly News, see what you've done there, lads, have tweeted, how do you feel when Nuno said that they couldn't find someone suitable to sign apart from Podence when they've said that they've been scouting over 6,000 players?
Yeah, good question. I mean, 6,000, I've used that number myself, but obviously, really, when it comes down to appropriate players that are actually available, it'd be far, far less than that, and affordable and whatnot. So, yeah, Podence, I mean, he makes a good point, as we were talking earlier, that, you know, he's kind of ready to hit the ground running. And I've got to say that, you know, Nuno's standards are a factor in why they don't sign perhaps as many players as fans would want them to. You know, he's got very, very high standards, very particular about who comes in, as we talked about earlier, doesn't want to disrupt the dynamic of his first team squad. So I think it's certainly been the case in transfer windows with Wolves where he will be offered a lot of players and they just won't be up to his standards for whatever reason. You know, Hwang being a case in point during the January window. Dani Olmo as well, I think, was kind of... Wolves would certainly have gone in for him if Nuno wanted to. He was definitely on their radar, and I gather he just... it was his decision to say no. So he... And Wolves should be grateful for this. Obviously, he has the final say on transfers. That's the key point here. So it wouldn't be the case at other clubs. And I think that's a key factor behind why they haven't got more players in during the window.
And hopefully it's a good reason for Nuno to stay at Wolves for a very long time, to have that ultimate level of control. Richard Grice asks, can you see a big summer splurge on transfers, or are you sensing Fosun are pulling back on their investment slightly now? Also, can you see them cashing in on Raul and Adama in the summer?
I mean, it depends on the amount of money being offered, doesn't it, really? If they're getting something silly for Traore, then they might find it hard to turn down. But I don't think massive clubs are going to be in for Traore just yet. I think if you look at his career history, it's only the last 6 months where he's, or less than that, that he's produced this form. You know, he's been very erratic earlier in his career, which is why he's at Wolves and not a bigger club. So I'm not sure how many would be willing to take a risk on him just yet. It's going to be a really interesting and pivotal summer. You've got to note that 3 years is kind of a typical cycle, you know, sometimes for players or managers, you know, to want to get itchy feet and move on. You've got to say that, you know, that Neves, Boly, Jota, and of course Nuno will all have been here 3 years when the summer comes round. So I think for them it'll be a case of they'll be wanting to play European football every year now. Some of them will be playing for their countries this summer in the Euros. So can Wolves fulfil those ambitions? And I think Nuno will be asking the same questions of himself. So a very interesting pivotal summer. I do think the investment will still be there, particularly now the Molyneux redevelopment is still on hold as well. So, you know, we're told, or I'm told, that priority will be given on first team spending. And Nuno will be having a look and kind of saying how his team is going to evolve from here. And if they are going to improve their first team, they are going to have to spend quite a bit of money. So they've not been shy in doing that the last two summers. 100 million spent in the last two summers. And I can foresee similar figures this year.
Gerber asks, any further updates on a Wolves USA trip? Going to be a dad in April, so if you've got any pull to move this to 2021, that would be appreciated.
No updates yet. From what I gather, they're very keen to go. They're really keen to capitalise on the Raul Jimenez factor, and the dream, as I've reported in The Athletic before, is to take on Club America, Jimenez's old club, arguably the biggest club in Mexico. Wolves against Club America in Texas would be perfect, you know, with the Latin America presence around there. There were some very, very big stadiums as well around that area. So that would be key. I know that they've been speaking to other European clubs about setting up friendlies as well. You know, they wouldn't just go over there for one game. So pre-season tours, big business these days. That's something new for Wolves. China was very successful last year, very successful on and off the field. So they'll be looking to replicate that. It's not easy, but America's definitely a market they're looking to capitalise on, certainly with Jimenez while he's still at the club.
I think The Athletic would be really keen to send us both there to record our pod from there, don't you think? We really need to get the flavour of everything Wolves are doing, so I think that's a very good idea.
Absolutely spot on.
Okay, I just want to say thank you to Dr. David Coulston, who's exiled in Canada, Sunderland and now Yorkshire over the past 45 years. He sent us a really lovely email reminiscing about times gone by at Molyneux, including that awful away game at Chorley. But thank you to Dr. David Halston for that. Now, this is a really important tweet.
I've got to say, Jackie, the feedback's been unbelievable from the last week or so. Lots on Twitter, lots of people are coming up to me at games as well and saying that they listen to the pod. And I was on the train back from Manchester on Sunday morning, slightly hungover, and concentrating on eating a Burger King, and some bloke, who I forgot to get his name, came up and said he just listened to the second episode and he loved it. And there's been lots of stuff like that, so hugely, hugely appreciative.
We do very much appreciate all the feedback. Thank you. Keep it coming. I mean, constructive criticism, if there's anything you want us to do more of, do let us know. We are all ears. And this is a really important one, though, Tim. Ian Davidson says, modern dilemma, guys. Valentine's Day, Friday the 14th of February. Three options. My wife says Italian meal for two. No. Come on. My son says Wolves, Leicester City. Tickets in hand. My granddaughter says McDonald's and Ryder's basketball fixture against Newcastle Eagles. What do I do? Jackie, please advise. Tim?
I mean, it's not the third option, is it?
basketball.
You've just got to decide what your one true love is, really.
I'm amazed this is even a dilemma, honestly.
Yeah,
surely
absolutely.
If you're married to someone, they understand what your love and passion and needs and desires are, and you've got your tickets. Why on earth would somebody, your wife or husband, want you to go for a meal with them when you're thinking, I really don't want to be here, I need to be watching Wolves against Leicester? Genuinely, can't get my head around it.
Well, absolutely. Wolves are there from the day you're born to the day you die. They will always be there, Jackie. That's that would be my choice.
Well, I particularly enjoyed a really miserable night against Wigan at Molineux a couple of years ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God, that was terrible.
That was on Valentine's night. It popped up on my Facebook because I had a picture through the rain of the scoreboard. It was just miserable night. I remember actually in March 31st one year, Wolves played Newcastle at home, and my mum was really upset that I didn't go out for a meal with my dad and brother and her for her birthday on that day. But it was Wolves at home, and I'd never ever been in Wolverhampton and not been to a game since I started going. And I just said, I'm really sorry, I need to go to Wolves Newcastle. It was in the Keegan era, and we won 6-2. And I couldn't even regret it. I couldn't say, Mum, sorry, I got that wrong, because I went home absolutely delirious and said, I'm just really sorry, I had to go and I did the right thing. But she's still my mum all these years later, and we still talk, which is lovely. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for today.
Thank you.
And a reminder that if anybody wants to read all your wonderful articles, which you'll still be writing during the winter break, no doubt.
Yeah, nice feature coming up on Luke Matheson this week, actually, and a few other bits and bobs which are in the pipeline. So yeah, keep tuned to The Athletic for the latest.
Great. And if you're not already a subscriber, then you can use the discount code of WolvesPod to get 40% off. That's WolvesPod. And it also means that you can listen to this podcast through the Athletic app and all the other wonderful podcasts, by the way, of different clubs. Ornstein and Chappers is a brilliant podcast. There are loads of them. You can hear them all ad-free, which is a real bonus, through the Athletic app. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Enjoy your break and see you soon. Bye for now.
See you soon.
Thank you.